My guest today is Lolita Molina, a paraplegic actress and author. Now, born in Siberia, she immigrated to the United States in 2002 as a toddler with her then foster family. Now, the fall of the same year through child abuse, Lolita was left permanently paralyzed, and it was shortly after that she was adopted by her current family. Now, her introduction to the arts began in musical theater at the early age of 6 years old. Having performed in 20 theatrical productions, she has turned it to social media platforms to create content ranging from short skits to special effect makeup. But during her junior year of high school in 2017, she had taken on the challenge in writing a 50,000-word novel in only 30 days. But not only did she surpass the word count goal by 14,000, but she did it in 20 days. But then in 2017, she discovered TikTok, opening a new world of possibilities and opportunities. She had gained popularity on the platform by uploading short acting and comedic skit clips, which she now has over 700,000 followers. Then in 2019, she was discovered by her management through TikTok, who had assisted her into the industry, eventually booking the character Jenna in Lionsgate and BuzzFeed's film One Up. And as Lolita lives by her motto, just because you have a disability doesn't mean you can't follow your dreams. So ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome actress and author Lolita Molina to the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. Now, I understand that you were born in Siberia. How did you make your way to America?
I was born in a barn in Siberia. It was always a running joke when I was growing up that I was the second Jesus. I don't remember any of my time spent in Russia just because I was so young. And the foster family brought me to the United States with another child under the guise of adoption to basically bypass the American foster care system laws and regulations. So I came here quite early in my life.
Yeah, I know that it's been a few decades now. So many were brought to the United States from Russia for the sole purpose of bypassing the American adoption agencies, which can take a couple of years to even get approval. But yes. I understand that you were permanently injured by your first foster family at the age of two. How long after that did you go to live with your second and current foster family?
It was immediately. Sorry, my dog. Go lay down.
That's okay. We love pets.
It was immediately. They heard about my story. I would say, if I remember the story accurately, it was the next 3 days when I spent time in the intensive care unit. My adopted mother had heard my story on the local news station and rushed over to the hospital as soon as she could. And I was placed in that family under foster care within weeks, I would say, after healing up from the surgery where they put rods in my spine. They said I needed to stay with someone, with a family that was capable of taking care of children with special needs. And both of my parents had those qualifications.
Well, was the other family ever charged?
Yes. The foster father spent 16 years, which was the maximum sentence in 2002 that could be given to him. And the wife spent under 3 years due to good behavior. So,
all right. Well, at least somebody paid the well, you really kind of paid the price more than they did. But at least some type of justice was served. How long did you spend in the hospital?
I believe my memory is fuzzy because the only recollection I have are from the records my father was able to pay a pretty penny for me to have. I would say I spent, I want to say it was 2 weeks in intensive care after the surgery, and then frequent visits. I spent more time in hospitals than I did at home. So a lot of that is very fuzzy to me.
Well, did you have any more surgeries after that as you were getting older and getting bigger?
Oh, absolutely. I believe six operations, in regards, five were in regards to the spinal cord injury, and then one was a one-off operation for something entirely different. But I had a full spinal fusion in 2013 when I was 12 years old. So I can no longer slouch. And
So by doing the fusion, so what, did they remove the rods permanently?
the rods were removed, and I have titanium discs in between every spinal disc from my shoulder blades all the way down to my tailbone. So it's very expensive spine.
Wow, well, you're almost the Terminator.
I have been called that by some of my relatives, yes.
Or the Bionic Woman. For those who remember that TV show back in the 70s, you could be the Bionic Woman.
The Million Dollar Woman.
That's it. Well, what led you to musical theater at the age of six?
It was ballet actually came first. We have the Ballet Theater of Ohio where I was growing up, and we had gone to see, I want to say it was Sleeping Beauty, and I was just dancing in the aisles because we had a beautiful place for wheelchair seating. And I think it was the director noticed and had come up to my parents after the show. And that winter, I joined the Ballet Theatre of Ohio for the Nutcracker for 5 consecutive years.
Well, that is fantastic. That's just your first time of actually being discovered, but you've been in 20 theatrical productions, and then you found the power of social media. I mean, what kind of content do you create, or what did you create in the beginning?
In the very beginning, they were dance compilations because I have been professionally dancing since I was 5.5 to 6 years old. And so I wanted to learn the modern hip hop trending style of dance because I had never learned that. I was trained in classical. So it started out as that. And then I made a one-off wheelchair joke video, and that kind of helped push me in the algorithm. And then some big accounts at the time duetted me, and the rest is history, essentially.
Well, I have a TikTok account. I actually don't spend hardly any time on it, but spend most of my time on Instagram. And I've seen a lot of people who have disabilities that are in wheelchairs, and they actually poke fun at themselves, which I think in the beginning for a lot of people like me, you laugh, but then you're surprised that they're poking fun at themselves. Is that something that you do?
I have a huge family, and since my parents specialized in those with special needs, a lot of my siblings have that. So we all grew up with that mentality of dark humor aimed at our specific disabilities. So seeing that on social media with other people similar to me poking some fun and having a little laugh about it, it was nice to kind of have that nostalgic feeling of I grew up with that 10 times worse.
So you take no offense to any of the dark humor.
Oh, no, I'm 90% sure I have friends that take offense for me when I crack a joke or two.
Well, I think some of what they call dark humor in social media is funny. It's not actually negative, and it's good to see everyone. At least, I think we should all learn to poke fun at ourselves and not take ourselves seriously. And for you doing that in the beginning, has that opened up doors for you?
I'm pretty sure that is what got me the audition for 1UP. I'm 99% sure because it was around that exact time of the audition that I was really, really honing in on dark humor and seeing how far can I push it before some apps get angry at me. And I'm pretty sure my agent had sent some of those clips alongside my audition tape.
Well, do you have, for you to do dark humor, which I think is really great, I really do. Do you get people commenting on your social media like, you shouldn't be doing that?
I don't get it in the sense of when I make humor about how I was paralyzed. I get a lot of people getting angry when I use certain phrases that are seen as degrading to people in wheelchairs, even though I never refer to another person with those terms. I only refer to myself. My own mother gets angry at me when I say it, but
what would be an example of degrading?
I call myself a cripple.
You know what is surprising? That's a word that we grew up with, gosh, in the 70s, and nobody thought twice about it. Now, if you say it in social media, you get lambasted by so many people who say, you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to say special needs or say disabled. And for you to say it, well, in a way, it's really okay because, you know what the word means. You do poke fun at yourself. And I'm kind of wondering, have you ever thought about being a comedian?
I don't find myself funny. I don't know how people find me funny. I just spew out what's on the top of my head, and I am surprised that it gets even a laugh. I don't consider myself a comedian.
Well, I like the humor because I've seen so much of that online. I do laugh because the other person is creating the content and they want you to laugh. And so I don't think we should feel guilty about that at all. But I commend you for, poking fun. And really doing that opens up a lot of conversations. What is the most common comment or question that you get on your social media account?
A family-friendly question or not-so-family-friendly questions?
Let's go with family-friendly.
Family-friendly questions would be typically the number one is, how were you paralyzed? And the second, they're usually tied. How do I live normal life? Just normal life questions. How do I drive? How do I swim? How do I keep fit? Very generalized questions, which I really enjoy answering, as well as medical questions. I enjoy teaching the way that I was brought up medical terminology wise versus someone else who was later in life, or they had different insurance, they had different doctors, they had different diagnoses. So it's really interesting to teach my side and then see other people talk about, oh, I went through this operation, I went through this thing. It's really interesting for me to not only educate, but then also learn from others.
Well, are you surprised about any of the negative comments online?
No. While I had not been particularly bullied growing up for being in a wheelchair, I had faced many cruel or crude questions. I had been faced with crude commentary from people. So nothing surprises me anymore.
Yeah. I don't know why people have to spend time being that way to others online. It doesn't push the needle forward for anybody. It just makes them look like a jerk. And because for you, you're extremely talented. And I noticed I think it's a very recent video that you shot where you're actually standing up and you actually put on the body brace.
Yes.
And why do you actually wear that when you're using the crutches?
So I actually grew up using walking braces. They have a technical term. I don't remember the letter organization of them. But I believe I used walking braces from ages, I want to say 3 to 17. And my mother would have me in those things 6 to 8 hours a day, 7 days a week with a 1 10-minute break. She was very dedicated. She had me in them because it helped me grow to as close to my full height as a spinal cord injury could allow. It helped me not get what we call the scrunch in my abdomen. So all of my organs got to grow to their full length, size, what have you. It's a very, very excellent tool if you are capable of using them. And I stopped in 2017 because they told me I filled out my growth plates. It wasn't really going to progress me anywhere. It was just going to upkeep. And I noticed my hips were getting really, really tight. It was getting more difficult with transfers. It was getting more difficult just elongating myself for videos, photos, everyday life. And so I started that back up again, and it's been great.
Well, I'm really glad I asked that question, because I've learned something new. A lot of people don't know, even though I interviewed tons of celebrities and actors and actresses like yourself, my background, I have a doctorate degree in health. And what a lot of people don't realize is that when it comes with the nervous system, when we're born, we have this substance called nerve growth factor, which is in the brain. And as we grow between the day that we're born and at least until we're 18, nerve growth factor is what allows us, as we're growing taller, it's the nervous system that has to grow along with us. And so for your foster mother to use that technique, I have to commend her for sticking with it and allowing your body to grow as it is supposed to grow. And so you're starting to do that again?
Yes. I don't do it the 6 to 8 hours a day every single day. I don't think I'll ever be able to get back to such a schedule. But I've gotten back into it with the weather warming up. It's also great to get the muscles moving again, as well as keep them exercised and warmed up because of nerve pains that I'll get when it's super cold out, especially around my scar tissue with my spinal fusion. So it's been really, really good to get everything limber again.
Why? And that helps in ballet, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It helps in dance. It helps in toning my body, keeping it going. It's been great, especially during the colder months.
Well, I understand that you challenged yourself to write a novel. Why did you want to challenge yourself in such a way? And what is your novel about?
It wasn't so much a challenge. It was more so during that class, you had two options. It was partake in the writing challenge of NaNoWriMo, or you could do poetry. I don't like poetry. No, I like poetry. I don't enjoy partaking in writing it. So it was more so lesser of the two evils. And the novel is a science fiction horror novel based around two sisters who were created through pure science, test tube babies, if you will. And it was with the intent of the women becoming undercover biological weaponry, essentially, like a sleeper agent. Takes place in Russia. And so it follows the story of them and trying to decide, should they go through with what they were essentially created to do, or live as what they want to be, which is human.
You know, that would end up being a great movie script.
Hopefully, if someone hears about it.
Well, I Hollywood, if you're watching or listening, there is a working script right now for Lolita's novel. So you need to jump on that before somebody else does. I think it would be great on the silver screen. So are there any other novels inside you that need to come out and be written?
So far, the sequel to the novel 2459 has been published, as well as two other horror novels, and I am currently working on the fifth, as well as numerous different screenplays, trying to keep busy. There's nothing to do where I live in the winter, so.
Now, so what interests you about horror?
My mother and I bonded over movies. She had me watching every Clint Eastwood film. She had me watching Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, Play Misty for Me. She had me watching Dirty Harry. So we bonded over movies. And I think my first horror film was Saw when I was 4. And it was by utter accident that I watched it. And ever since then, I just fell in love with what goes bump in the night and how does the mind work when it is so detached from a collective reality. It's always intrigued me. And then I saw The Exorcist and I fell in love with special effects.
Wow, I just, it was funny. Just this morning, I just interviewed a film director on a horror film. I actually told him, I said, I can't put this in the category of horror because I would call it more of horrific. And because it's a film called Beaten to Death. So if you're into movies like Saw, I will say this, this film probably takes it over the edge.
Oh, so a
So,
martyr.
yeah, so it's on streaming if you're interested, Lolita, but it's called Beaten to Death. So if you like that kind of stuff, you may want to check it out. But I have to ask because TikTok is the biggest social media rage. When you first started, what did you do to create your content?
It all started with my little sister daring me to just hold on to a social media account for a week. I wasn't a social media guru. I didn't know anything really about social media. I was raised by boomers. I don't know. And basically she dared me to hold on to an account and care about it for a week. And I think it's safe to say that I have surpassed that and she owes me the $20 I never got. So
Oh my goodness. So did you just start doing makeup tutorials before you started doing skits?
I want to say my very first video was some rinky-dink comedy sketch from a sitcom that I had just heard, and then it was a dance video, and then I started getting into makeup. I wasn't good at it at the time. I'm very much self-taught, and so you can really see the progression from when I had to paint eyeballs onto my eyes before I even knew that I could wear contact lenses. So it was very bare bones back then.
Well, starting out on social media, what was your emotions like when the first time you started getting a negative comment or two?
When I got my first negative comment, it was actually when my first videos started going semi-viral for back then. I would just respond with an either darker joke or I would respond with a quip on par with what they said, and then I saw that they followed me immediately after.
Yeah, that's fighting fire with fire. I've seen people who are so bold on social media that when they get a negative comment, they literally do the screenshot of the negative comment and either say something back about it, and then, like you said, the person ends up following you back as a sign of respect.
I don't see the point in getting angry over fruit that is so low hanging I can reach it. I don't see the point. When you know that their malicious intent is a pillow toss at you. So why not have some fun with it and make my Thursday night?
You have the best attitude about that. I got to commend you for that. And I wish more people would have the same attitude and not get their feathers ruffled. I don't mind a negative comment. I think the worst comments online are crude remarks, which have no place on social media.
Oh, I have
And
my lines.
oh, what, say that again?
I have my lines that I draw. Absolutely. However, I've taken as many precautionary measurements that I can through social media to dwindle those down to the occasional, maybe once a year. But they're always going to slip through the cracks, and the block button is a nice, handy anonymous tool.
Yes, it is. Well, how in the world did your current management discover you on TikTok, and how did you know if they were legit or not?
That's the funny part. I thought he was a scammer. He and I laugh about it all the time now. We had just spoken not long ago. He was really, really trying to get my attention. And I saw his public comments, and then I saw his private messages. But I genuinely thought he was trying to scam me. I was raised very cautious of Hollywood. I was raised to be very, very careful, because we had gotten scammed before when I was a child with fake Hollywood people and agents and all that fun stuff. So it wasn't until an account with almost 2 million followers at the time messaged me, and she told me, "He's legit, he's my agent, you can trust him." And I messaged him finally, and he got me an audition that night, because it was the night it was due. That was what he kept trying to get me to answer to.
It was very funny. So was that for the film One Up?
No. This was for the Texas Chainsaw reboot. It was a horror film.
Wow. And that was right up your alley.
Yes. And I really wish they had gone with the original idea. I don't know exactly where things changed, but it was really intriguing having the final girl be in a wheelchair, and you don't really hear of it. So I was super excited just to hear that they changed it.
Well, at least you're not blonde, because the blonde girl always is the first one to go in the horror movie.
Absolutely.
So you starred in the movie One Up, which has some great star power, by the way. You had Ruby Rose, Taylor Perez. How did you get that part?
I actually had spoken to some of the team behind One Up a year after we had wrapped filming. And I asked them, is it okay if I asked how you picked? Because I know casting directors can only do so much for you. And I love Barbara. She was so sweet, especially when we finally got to meet face to face. And the producers had told me they really, really fought to get me out there, even though they had someone lined up already in Canada. And me being in Ohio during quarantine, it was a race against the clock before the borders closed. And they said, had you not been able to do that, you wouldn't have been here. So it was really on me to get out there as soon as possible.
So this was filmed in Canada?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I have actor friends who live in Canada, because most of it's either going to be Montreal or Toronto.
Yes.
And, during the pandemic, they were trapped in Canada, mm-hmm. could not come to America. Of course, a lot of things, filming was very, very difficult. So on set at One Up, that was during the pandemic.
Yes, it was. And for being my very first time on a professional, not an indie film, it was a genuine set. It's really intriguing that I get to say it was during a pandemic of my lifetime and seeing just how different it was. So I'm really curious if/when I get another role to see what a set is like after a pandemic. I'm really, really curious to see just how different it is. I want to know what was different.
Well, One Up was your fourth film.
Yes.
How would you compare besides just take the pandemic out, how would you compare your experience being on the set of One Up versus the three films prior?
One, the crews are so much bigger with One Up. It was far more professional with timestamps and schedules and actual wardrobe that didn't come from my closet. It was just so different. And I really, really loved every second that I had, pandemic or not. I really enjoyed my time. And I really hope that wasn't a one and done situation. But if it is, I am entirely grateful for the time that I had.
Well, are there any new film projects in the works?
It's a game of waiting. It is auditions and then wait, audition and then wait. But I can't even complain about that because while my peers get more auditions than I do, a lot of them are background, guest star, whereas I may get an audition or two a month. They are really great parts, big parts, amazing stories and characters to tell. So I'm very grateful. It's just, I am not a patient woman. I don't like waiting.
I don't blame you. But so let me ask you that, because I know what all the casting sites are like. I mean, there's Actor Access, Casting Frontier, the list goes on. So I'm sure that you're on all of those.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So let's say you get email notices coming in for auditions. For you, being in a wheelchair, do you audition for other parts that are not asking for maybe someone with a disability? Because I've received I would get so many casting emails, and they're very specific. How do you handle those? How do you handle the auditions that come into you? Do you just like go for it?
I do. And I've slowly, snail's pace, have built up people that actually recommend me to casting directors for parts that are not wheelchair assigned. And I am always surprised when I get one. I am fluent in American Sign Language. I have a sister who is deaf. And I've gotten multiple auditions for sign language interpreter roles. I've gotten roles that are ambulatory wheelchair roles, even though I am not. I even got to audition for Wicked, which was amazing. Even though I know in the play, she walks eventually. And they said that's going to be of no issue. So that was amazing. I've gotten roles for superheroes. I've gotten auditions. I keep saying roles. I'm manifesting. But it's always been great to see casting directors put themselves in the position of, well, let's give it a shot. Let's see what these people can do. Let's see if, like, you know, who's it gonna hurt? If they're not good, we just won't send it. And I think that's a great first step. I think it's wonderful.
Not only do I commend you for going after all of the roles that are sent to you, I commend the casting agents and directors for at least being completely open to say, hey, maybe we can go this route, because it's only fair. And not only that, it's acting.
Yes. And yeah. I think it's great. I think because it wasn't like that when I first started doing auditions. The only auditions I would receive that weren't wheelchair-based were voiceovers, because it didn't matter if you were paralyzed or not. So it's crazy that I got to see that progression almost in real time in my inbox, where it just started really flooding in just auditions for anything that they thought I fit, which I think is great.
Well, let me ask you this, because you brought up voiceovers. Have you done any voiceover work? Because you have excellent speech.
Oh, thank you. I did, but the project not only halted, things had gone wrong. It was for a video game, and I don't know what the future of that is anymore, but that was a lot of fun to be able to do that just in the comfort of my home, miles and miles away. But I don't think it will see the light of day.
I would even go after all of the voiceover roles. I mean, I've got a friend of mine who is an actor who has done extremely well for VOs in video games. And yes. So there's still a big market for that. But you're very well spoken. You have great tones. So, hey, mic up and keep doing it.
Oh, why, thank you.
Well, if you could choose a role of a lifetime, what would it be?
I was just thinking about it. Have you ever read the A Song of Ice and Fire, the Game of Thrones?
No, I have not.
Well, there is a character, she Renice the First, she is one of the wives to the king, essentially. And she's always been a character I loved. And I would just love to see a character in the Game of Thrones universe with such power and a dragon that is the size of the Empire State Building. And she's paralyzed and they don't care. I think that would just be beautiful, especially in terms of her tragic story. I think it would just be great. So if anyone from HBO or who works alongside Mr. Martin, I will give my phone number immediately.
There you go. All right, HBO, if you're listening or watching, Lolita Molina, she's the one that you need to cast. And not only that, just about every Hollywood casting agent out there, Lolita Molina is extremely talented. To me, you have such a very large future ahead of you. I mean, what other goals do you have that you wish to accomplish?
Whenever I'm asked that, I would have to go back to my statement I made one tipsy Friday night, and it was to be the first paraplegic to win an Oscar someday. Very far in the future.
I would not say too far into the future. It could be very close into the future because I truly believe that can happen. I stand in agreement with you on that one.
Well, at least one of us is standing.
Oh, there's your humor, and I love it. And see, I knew I was waiting that I was probably going to say something like that on the off the top of my head and not even realize it. So I'm glad that you have the sense of humor to take that and to go with it. And but no, I think an Oscar is always in the future. I have heard so many incredible stories of people being nominated, and yeah, we need that. We need someone to win the Oscar like that, and I think you're probably one of the ones to actually do that. So for you, what's on the horizon in 2024?
It's been a lot of behind the scenes activities. It's been a lot of more so personal advancements into my career that I've been needing to take for probably the past 2 years and just haven't done it. It's just a lot of waiting. It's a lot of getting stuff out there to the proper people and the proper organizations, and then just sitting back and hoping it did not get lost in a spam inbox.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. Now, are you currently taking acting lessons?
I did growing up, I took a few courses, and my hopes are this year, if not the beginning of next year, to really get back into it. I was trained in stage combat. I'd like to recertify myself and learn something new. I am totally not opposed to trying out anything I possibly can.
I love that. I love that. You are an inspiration. I think you motivate us to be better, to do better. And I just encourage you to keep going. To me, in my personal opinion, you have an incredible, bright future in front of you in film, voiceover, dance, and so much more. And I guess what the fifth novel is on the way.
Hopefully it's getting there at a crawling pace, but it's hopefully coming.
Well, you never know that you end up with a series like Harry Potter.
Don't even get me started on that. My sister was addicted to those novels, and those were probably the first ones I read. As soon as I knew how to read, she dumped them all on me. So maybe.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, but I've got to thank you, Lolita, for being on the show today and giving all of us your personal insights, and not only that, a lot of your incredible work, and I know that there's more on the way.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very happy to be here.
Ladies and gentlemen, Lolita Molina, Follow her on TikTok. She's also on Instagram. Hey, join her legion of fans, because I will tell you this, you never know. She could be the first to win an Oscar. And I'm not even going to say disabled, because you have every right to go after every role that is handed to you, Lolita. So Oscar nonetheless. So you are extremely talented, and who knows, one day you'll hear the great words and the winner is. But ladies, yeah, and ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank all of you for watching and listening. And you can catch all of the replays of our interviews with the top film directors, producers, and screenwriters, as well as actors like Lolita Molina and more at Bond on Cinema. And we are also available on YouTube and a dozen audio platforms as well. So again, I want to thank you for watching and listening. And as for me, I will either see you at the movies or from the red carpet.